Readers Entertainment Radio, where variety is the spice of life.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Readers Entertainment Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Watson, and I'm pleased to be with you this evening. Our guest today is just fantastic. She knows all about taking the sensible road in life, being an avid reader and a closet writer. She pushed aside literary pursuits and focused instead on a career in science. But as with most deferred dreams, it came knocking. Now she writes all about tall, dark, handsome men, and has one of her own. Sensible is the last thing you'll find on our guest bucket list. This best-selling historical romance author knows what she wants, and her novels continue to garner high praise and reviews. I'd like to give a very warm welcome to Erin Knightley. Welcome, Erin.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on today. I'm so delighted to be joining you.
Oh, absolutely my pleasure. Now, Erin and I both live in the same vicinity in North Carolina, so it's extra exciting for me to have a local author on the show. And though we didn't see much of each other at the last RT Book Lovers Convention, I'm glad she's here now.
I know. I can't believe that we were, I think we saw each other for all of 5 seconds as we were rushing by in the hubbub of it all. But, that's just so awesome to be able to join you today and hopefully to be able to do lunch again soon.
Now, actually, the funny thing is you were actually on my plane coming back. I was in
really?
The back and I got a chance to move to like around the exit rows. I think that's about, you know, row 15 or so. And I think you were right up front. And by the time, of course, I got out, I didn't see you. And then it was funny because when I was coming out, I was waiting for my husband to pick me up. And I was looking down and I looked up just as you pulled off.
Oh, gosh. We are like ships passing in the night. Oh, my gosh.
Exactly.
And I, of course, am completely oblivious to everything, especially at the end of a trip like that. That is hilarious. Okay, so yes.
Oh, I am too, usually. I am just like head down, just trying to get to where I'm going. Now, before we go too far, I'd want our listeners to know that the live chat session is open, and you're welcome to comment or ask questions there. You can also call us at area code 646-200-4071 or toll free at 877-497-5906. And, of course, after the live show, we will post the podcast and blog recap on readersentertainment.com. And I know many of our listeners would like to check out Erin's website while we're having our show, so you can find her at www.erinknightley.com. Now, Erin, before we start, I'd like our audience to get to know a little bit more about you and the driving force behind your novel. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. As you said before, I actually used to be in the science field, but my passion has always been in writing, and particularly in romance. I think I've read that since I was a young 17-year-old lifeguard who stumbled upon the romance cache at the apartment complex I worked at. And for me, the driving force behind my novels is always an escape. I want a reader to come home, and if it's been a hard day or if there are tough things going on in their life, I want them to pick up my book and escape and be happy and to be guaranteed of a smile at the end of the day. And that's the beautiful HEA that we peddle as romance authors. A happily ever after is pretty much, I hate to have a spoiler there in case, you know, but I can promise you my characters will always have that happily ever after at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Erin, you write Regency romance novels, so can you tell our listeners what that subgenre entails and whether it's traditional Regency or Regency historical romance?
Sure. The Regency time period is set in basically from 1811 to 1820, although there's a little in fiction, we use a little wiggle room on that, but that's basically when the Prince Regent was in power in England, and it was just a really unique time in history, and it's an interesting time to escape to, and to, that's when we think of all that witty dialogue, and the the traditional regencies are much more true to the time period in the sense that you should feel like you're standing in an 1815 parlor listening to the witty repartee between, you know, the characters and that fast-paced Georgette Heyer style of writing. The Regency historical romances is really closer to what I write, which is it's for the modern reader to enjoy. So it may not be as strict to the characterizations or how they would have spoken, but, you know, it should be historically accurate still. We do a lot of research. But it's a little bit, just a little bit more modern in the characterization. It's something that I want to have a historical flavor and feel, but I want for my my modern readers to really kind of laugh and enjoy along with it.
Right. Now, let's jump right in and talk about your latest novel, The Baron Next Door. I believe that's book one in a Prelude to a Kiss novel. And I remember chatting with you over lunch about this novel, and I love the premise. You had me hooked, you know, from the first minute or so in. And what I've read so far is definitely, you know, exciting, and I found myself not really happy when my first couple of sample chapters was over. Can you tell us about your story?
I managed to effectively hook you, my evil plan.
Yes, you did. Yes,
you did. The Prelude to a Kiss series is actually set in Bath, and it's set in a fictional music festival, the Summer Serenade in Somerset, where I have the three lady musicians come together to form a trio, and the first one is with Charity. And she's a talented pianoforte player, and The Baron Next Door, cleverly titled, is a rather, I don't want to say grumpy, but a little bit curmudgeon-y neighbor who has his reasons, and they completely butt heads because he hates her music, and that's her passion. So it's great fun. I really loved getting, this is my fourth novel, but the first in that series, and it was just such a delight to write.
Now, I know your main character, Charity Effington, is reserved, but she's passionate about two things that she loves most in life, and that is love and music. She's also no stranger to being at the center of a scandal. So tell us a little bit about her and what your motivation was for creating such a complex character.
Well, Charity actually was introduced in my second book, A Taste for Scandal. She had a betrothal with the hero there, with Richard, and she was pretty much integral to the romance and that allowing that romance to take place by creating a scandal. I'm not going to go too far into that because
of course I'm writing that down because I'm like,
so she showed up and I had readers were writing me and saying, but what happens with Charity? And I was already thinking the same thing because she really stuck with me. She's kind of a reserved, you know, under the radar type young lady, but there are certain things that really make her stand up. And her music is her incredible passion, and she's very talented. Believe it or not, she's actually based on my own brother. I know that there's not a lot of men that can say that a heroine is based on him, but her musical ability is really based on him in the sense that it's very natural and organic. It's not necessarily something that's taught. I mean, she did have lessons, but she composes, and that came from her soul, from deep in her. And as for the love part, that's the one thing in her life that she put her foot down and said, you know, I want love. I'm not just going to marry to marry. And I think it made her a very admirable and really interesting character to me. So she had to have
right.
her own book.
She was definitely going against the grain back then because, you know, most of the time it's all about the arranged marriages and it's just assumed a woman would marry and by a certain age. And I think it was like, what?
Advantageous match. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Now, I know a little bit about the Prelude series as a whole, but can you tell readers what's in store from one book to the next? Should they read them in sequential order?
Well, my books are always standalone, but I think that they're much more richly enjoyed if you do start from the beginning of the series because you'll see how they're the trio's relationship grows, the three girls. They have a, in my very humble opinion, they have a great relationship, and it's great fun to watch that friendship. It's kind of that friendship that we all kind of want to find, you know, and that really grows throughout the series. And so the second one is Sophie, who, and her book comes out in January, and she's an oboe player, which, of course, goes so well with the pianoforte. And then the third character is actually May, and she plays the Chinese zither.
Right. I saw that. I'm like, ooh, that's an interesting twist.
I have to thank my plotting partners for that. We came up with it during one epic plotting session, and we were all like, the zither.
Was there wine involved, Erin?
I can neither deny or confirm that one.
Confirm nor deny.
But
I can see it now. How about a zither?
Well, the unique thing about it is that it's so unique and exotic. It's that real twangy-sounding harpish. But it can also play Mozart, and you can play things that sound, you know, very European with it as well. So it was really interesting to add to the mix. So I would recommend reading them in order, but it's certainly not necessary. You should be able to always pick up one of my books and enjoy it from the start.
Great. Now, for those of us just joining us, or those of you just joining us, we're chatting with best-selling Regency romance author Erin Knightley about her newest novel, A Baron Next Door, from the Prelude to a Kiss series. Seriously, Lisa. Okay, Erin.
It's a mouthful.
Back to you, because apparently I'm just all over the place. You've penned quite a few Regency romances. What initially drew you to that specific genre?
You know, I started out in the contemporaries, and then I found Westerns. This is back in those college days. And then when I stumbled on that Regency era, it was something so romantic, and it's a way of having a fantasy world that's still grounded in reality. It's not necessarily like a sci-fi world where you would actually build a world from scratch. It's something that was here. It's something that we have pictures of, those beautiful ball gowns, and and we have the writings, you know, Jane Austen, and, you know, things that we can really immerse ourselves in and feel this kind of a slower, more witty, more civilized, but yet not. You know, there was a lot of rawness to the time period as well. And I don't know, it was something that I could truly escape into. I think that's the joy of a romance novel, is really getting lost between the pages and, you know.
Absolutely.
Picturing
yourself.
It's
hard for me to put down,
different.
And historical happens to be my favorite. So.
Oh, yay!
I have been reading historical novels, I believe, since I was a teenager also. And I used to get them, my sister used to get them from, like, some store that had old books, and she introduced me first to, like, Barbara Cartland.
So, oh,
that
yeah,
way
old school goodness there.
Oh, yes. I started reading those when I was young, and, of course, got hooked, and that's still my favorite genre, I believe. Now, tell us a little bit about Hugh Danby. He's the new and very reluctant Baron Cadwith, and if I didn't say that right, please correct me.
You got it. If you didn't say it, then I don't know how to say it. It's an actual place, so Cadwith is all I've got in my head.
Wow. And he seems to be dealing with a lot of pain from his past and would prefer to suffer in silence, of course, but that doesn't seem likely with Charity as his next-door neighbor for the summer. So tell us what he's like, and when does that first pull of attraction happen between Hugh and Charity? Certainly not at their first meeting.
Oh, man, I loved writing that first meeting. There was such angry sparks flying. Not the good kind, but the great kind of sparks. With Hugh, you know, he comes off as being just, like I said, the curmudgeon-y, reluctant to be involved in any part of society, but really it stems from his wounds. He was in Waterloo and had some terrible injuries and has been dealing with the aftermath for the past 4 years. And when his brother dies, he's suddenly thrust into this new role of being the Baron, and he's got to get well. So where does he head? He heads off to Bath, and where it's supposed to be the city of healing waters. And in a kind of a last-ditch effort to try for something good, and he had no idea that this loud, obnoxious to him festival would be there. And, you know, Charity is willing to give everyone the benefit of the doubt, but, man, when he attacks her music, the very first words he says to her, you know, keep that racket to an infernal racket down, you know, she really takes umbrage with that. And so it's almost like, you know, the little tit for tat until one night, you know, I think it all starts to come together on the balcony scenes, which if anybody has seen the glorious cover that Penguin has bestowed upon me, you will see the beautiful night scene on there. And that's because much of their romance actually takes place kind of in the quiet darkness of the balcony when all of that, all of the rest of the world falls away and we start to see little pieces of their soul, and she starts to recognize the pain in him and he starts to recognize the goodness in her. And those were the scenes that they really resonated with me, and they seemed to resonate with the readers as well.
Now, I know as soon as I read that they were in Bath, I got excited because I was in Bath last November, and I got there at the start of the Bath Christmas Festival, and, like, it took me 2 seconds to fall in love with the town. They had nice little quaint stalls with people selling Christmas wares. Of course, Bath Abbey. I did go to the Roman baths. I did taste the water.
Oh,
kind of metallic
and
hot. So, I'm like, oh, okay. But, you know, it was just really magical. It really kind of pulled at me. And not to mention I had a very, very good bratwurst from a local stand there. And
clearly
that, of course, had me hooked right there. So what made you set your story in Bath?
Well, you know, my sister, Kara, and I, we went to England and Paris and a couple other places in, I think it was 2007 or 8. It was a long time ago, but it was the most, like you said, magical place I had ever been. I mean, the beautiful limestone, just the rich history that's there, the promenade, the river, the pump room, which, you know, still stands from when Jane Austen mm-hmm. was there. And, I mean, it just was magical. And I could just feel, like, this part of the city in me. And it's like, okay, I've got to find a time to capture this. And actually, in that time, Bath was kind of it was becoming unfashionable.
Mm-hmm.
People were going towards the mountains or towards the beaches and the Lake District, but it was kind of falling out of fashion. But that's why I created this fictional music festival. It was meant to draw the fashionable
mm-hmm.
back in for the time when people weren't normally there, which was the summer. So that was why I came up with the music festival idea. But yeah, Bath was just something very special. It was something in the water, I guess. It was something in the light. It was something in the rolling hills that
I agree
I
with
wanted
you there. I must have taken like 120 pictures in a matter of an hour and a half because it was just, I agree with you. There's just a je ne sais quoi there. There's something there that just, you know, just when I was in the bath and I was looking over on the upper level over at the Bath Abbey, and it was just like, oh, my gosh, I don't want to leave.
And it's exactly what they would have seen then. I feel like, hey, I've immersed myself in this place. I have been there. I can describe those streets, you know. I can describe
mm-hmm.
what the pump room looks like. And on top of that, of course, I did mad research and had fun reading about the legends that went along with it. And I tried to lightly pepper that in. I hopefully didn't have too heavy of a hand. Try to lightly pepper in what, you know, the legends that came across, where they thought the waters came from and that warmth. And, yeah,
mm-hmm.
it was I'm glad you've been there. It's so fun to talk to somebody that is really experienced.
Okay, that's
that.
A whole nother conversation in the lunch.
Yeah, we're doing it. We're doing it next time, I promise.
Now, Erin, I have been to your website, and I have to tell you, I loved with a capital L your bucket list. There are so many great things on there. And, yes, I, too, would like to meet Colin Firth, Hugh Jackman, and Gerard Butler. So you have to tell us, how in the world did you meet Colin and Gerard, and how great did it feel for you to conquer your deathly fair skin?
Oh, well, old Colin and Jerry. you know,
old friends.
Old buddy, old pal. Yes, I do have photographic evidence of me being hugged by the glorious Colin Firth.
I saw that. Almost like
Mr. Darcy.
Like,
oh, gosh. And yes, he smelled wonderful. And that was actually, he was filming here in Raleigh, and on a whim, I just, you know, as the writer I am with no real schedule, I totally got in my car and drove downtown and stood at the barricades, and it just happened to be that moment. Oh, dear God, yes, I was that person. So was Marquita Valentine. If you're listening, Marquita, you were there too. but, yeah, he came over and was just so kind and smelled so good and was really lovely to take the time to greet his fans. As for Gerard Butler, that was actually at a Hollywood, I think it was a post-Grammy party that I went to. I know, that sounds crazy. It was actually in Hollywood. I was with a friend who's a soap opera star, and, yeah, I heard that Scottish accent behind me, and time stood still as I turned
my
head.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my God. And, you know, I nearly die, and my friend looks at me. She goes, oh, would you like to meet him? I was like, oh, my God, girl, have you been holding out on me? You know this man. So
yeah.
Luckily for me, I was too awestruck to actually say anything intelligent because it wouldn't have been intelligent. It would have just been me, a puddle on the ground. So I just kind of nodded and smiled like the poor kid in The Christmas Story when he met Santa, you know. So Lord knows what will happen if I ever actually do meet Hugh Jackman, but...
Oh, and of course, afterwards, you were probably like all sorts of witty things you thought about saying.
Oh, yes, for months, all of these delightful little Aaron snippets I could have said. No, none of that. I'm not that witty. That's why I write. I can edit. As for skiing, yeah, that was amazing because I have been terrified of, you know, murdering myself against a tree.
Mm-hmm.
But it was amazing and, you know, flight, it's like as close as we can get, except for those crazy wingsuit people, but as close as we can get to that flight through land, it's just you and the whistling wind and the swish of the snow and the awkwardness of clomping back to your room with those god-awful boots on. And
oh, my gosh, yes. I've been skiing, and I didn't hear any wind whistles. I heard a lot of me going, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God.
And that was just the Bunny Hill, right?
Yes, it was the Bunny Hill. Yes, I did. Well, I was just a first timer, so I didn't have the poles yet. He was teaching me without the poles. And so I am headed toward buildings, and I go all the way down the entire slope, all the way to the concrete, people. And I can tell you, skis will stop on concrete.
A good life lesson.
So, yes, that was, two-time skiing, that was probably good enough for me. And
wow.
Moving on.
Yep. You can cross that off your list.
I surely can. Check. Now, you used original compositions to inspire scenes in your novel, and as you said, your brother composed a song that you pulled inspiration from when writing a scene where Charity composes a song for Hugh. Now, being from a musical family myself, I know how essential music can be to focus your creativity. Now, do you write with music often or only during certain points in your novels?
Well, that was actually really unique. I'm one of those people that when I'm writing, I want absolute silence. I mean, I want the noise-canceling headphones on. I glare at the dogs if they adjust their position. You know, I just want it to be silent. That's why I usually write after my husband goes to bed. It's just quiet, no emails, no nothing. But when I was writing this book, you know, she was so steeped in music, and I wanted to be sure that I captured that.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, my brother had written, I believe it's called The Galaxies Beneath Us. There's a link to it on my website if you go to
listen to it.
Yeah, it's under extras. And it was so dark and rich and beautiful. And I thought, you know, this is something that if back in that time period, you know, she played all upbeat and tinkling high music,
right,
which is, you know, the bane of poor Hugh's existence. But she decides, you know, this just comes to her, and she wants it to be soothing. She wants to soothe him with the thing that always seems to hurt him.
Mm-hmm.
And so on that scene, I actually, according to my Apple iTunes, I played that scene 78 times while writing. I played that music, that video 78 times while writing, and just over and over and over, trying to make sure that I was immersing the reader in that music as much as I could without actually having music. And I was super excited when those first reviews came in, and I had a couple of people actually write about that and say that they could
nailed it.
It. So I was like, yes. So shout out to my brother, Andy McElroy. He's incredibly talented, and he actually is at this moment recording a piece that is an original composition specifically meant for this book. It's a companion piece, and I'll post that shortly, hopefully in the next week or two.
Now, that's pretty neat.
Cool. talented. Yeah, I could never.
Yeah, my brother is a professional jazz musician, and there's no way. Everybody plays music but me. All my sisters, my brother, my mother. I write.
Oh, wow.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's where
that's your creativity, yeah.
Now, speaking of writing, name me one thing you cannot do without while writing.
Gum. 100% gum. I tell you what, I tell people I think my jaw is directly wired into my creativity center. It's like the gerbil-powered wheel, you know, where I need to be moving my mouth when I'm trying to write. And I discovered early on that you don't want to be eating cookies and candy the whole time. So, or even carrots, for that matter. So, yeah, gum is my 100% must-have.
Okay. Now, tell us, do you have any upcoming events you'd like readers to know about, and where else can they find and interact with you online?
Oh, I'm on Twitter way too much, and Facebook. So I'm at, my handle is just Erin Knightley, and there is an E at the end, it's L-E-Y, as well as I'm at Facebook, facebook.com/Erin Knightley. And I'm always, always happy to talk to anyone that wants to talk to me. I try to make a point to always respond back because it's fun. I love meeting new people. And as for new things, the Baron Next Door, yeah, that just came out last week, so it's fresh on the shelves. It should be at the Walmarts and Barnes & Nobles near you. And I don't know, I'm going to be hunkering down this summer because I've got a book due that I need to start. We've got May's story that's due. And before I can head off to England for my research trip in September 30th.
Oh, gasp.
Get me some writing done, which means I shall be on Twitter more than ever.
Now, really quick, I only got 2 minutes left, but I do want to squeeze this in here because I think all of them are so amazing. But as an author, I know how important the book covers are. And do you have any input in your book covers, or does the publisher kind of go, here's your next book cover, and you just, you know, either you like it or you don't, but that's what it is?
No, they've been wonderful. All five of them, basically, I have told them, you know, I want her to be inside. I want them to be, like, the Baron Next Door, I wanted them to be at a dark night, you know, at night on the balcony. I wanted him to be wearing the shirt that was rolled up at the sleeves and open at the chest because that's a part of the scene. They've done such an amazing job of bringing each one of those to life. I'm in my office right now. I'm looking at my huge framed posters because they're just so pretty. I'm so thrilled. So I actually have, they let me have a lot of input in that. They refused to change the purple sky for Flirting with Fortune, which I still am not sure what that post-apocalyptic looks all about, but it is pretty. they've given me a lot of input, and I'm very grateful to them for the beautiful job they've done.
Well,
but if you don't like any of them, it's their fault.
No, I like them all. And it's like, I like that one, I like that one. I'm like, okay, where to start?
See, it's that historical, it's those gowns, darn it. The gowns and those breeches, you can't go wrong with either one of those.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't be fooled. It's not the gowns for me, it's the guys. I mean, the gowns are pretty. But, yeah, definitely, you know, I like characters, you know, and the angst between them and just the complexity. So, yeah, I will be definitely picking up The Baron Next Door from Erin Knightley. And, Erin, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. It has been such a pleasure having you. And I
thank
so look you. Forward to the opportunity to speak with you again when your next book comes out.
Wonderful. Thank you so
much.
Oh,
before that, of course.
Well, we're doing lunch. I mean, come on.
Absolutely. Well, I would like to thank our listeners for joining us here at Readers Entertainment Radio. The time just flew by. But don't forget to find us at readersentertainment.com. You can stop by. You can leave a comment about tonight's show. We'd love to hear from you. I am Lisa Watson, your host, reminding you that in everything you do, be happy and be inspired. Have a great evening.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.
Erin, thanks so much for joining me.
Oh, that was awesome. Thank you so much. You are an amazing host. Well done. A pro.
Oh, thank you so much. I will definitely be chatting with you soon.
Oh, yes, I can't wait. I hope you can. Let's look at our calendars and see when we can next get together. I would love to have a lunch with you soon.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks so much. Have a great night.
You too. Bye. Thanks. Bye-bye.